This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Gas House Gang underway on this Friday afternoon. Nate Gatter with you, Matt Pauly alongside, getting ready for tonight, the Cardinals and the Reds in the opener of a three-game series, game 7 of 9 in this homestand for the Redbirds, coming off the day off yesterday and having salvaged a series Wednesday against the Rangers. Kyle Leahy will pitch for St. Louis, Brady Singer for Cincinnati tonight, 7:15 first pitch. Matt will have the pregame for you here on KMOX and across the Cardinals radio network starting at 6:20, and then we'll be on the call alongside Ricky Horton this evening from Busch Stadium. Matt, we are very excited to listen to that. I assume you are excited to bring it to us.
Yeah, always appreciative when an opportunity like that comes open, the chance to, you know, sit in one of the seats of, you know, both John Rooney, the voice of the Cardinals, and Mike Claiborne are off tonight. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I've never done a game with Ricky, so I'm looking forward to being able to work alongside of him.
Okay, so I gave you your credit for that, and that has bought me the goodwill now that I've got to do another thing that I warned you I was going to do. I found out today, I had never known this about Matt Pauly before, that he has, as of now, over 1,600 unread text messages, over 3,800 unread emails, and somehow over 900 unacknowledged either missed calls or voicemails, which that one is maybe the most bizarre. I've never seen a number anywhere close to that. How did this happen? When's the last time you listened to a voicemail? I mean, it's got to be decades ago.
If I'm not interested in a text message, an email, or a voicemail, I just let it go.
So really, if someone texts you, they have like the first four or five words or whatever you can see in the preview to hook you, or you're just never going to click on it for all time.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lesson to be learned there for those of us in radio, because our jobs at the beginning of shows is to grab the audience and get them. So my cell phone is the embodiment of what we are supposed to be doing as radio hosts.
This is really just your professionalism and your commitment to your craft.
Yeah, just a reminder every day when I look at my phone that if you don't grab me, you don't have me, and that's the way it is for everybody.
Well, you can follow the show any which way you want. You can join us on the phone, 314-436-7900. You can use the TalkBack feature on the free Odyssey app, where you can always listen live. And, of course, you can leave comments on any of our streams across Facebook, X, YouTube, anywhere else. And I would love to know if any of you out there can beat any of Matt's numbers. 3,800 unread emails, 1,600 unread text messages, 900 unacknowledged missed calls and or voicemails. And those are the numbers we're looking for. That's where the bidding is at here to start. Pretty high opening prices. And Matt, let's turn our attention to what people really want to hear, which is what's going on with the Cardinals. Not a bad first six games in this homestand, 3-3 so far. There've been some recovery from that slide that was going on in mid to late May on the road, but certainly not a resurgence either, especially dropping the series against the Rangers. What do you have your eyes on with these three remaining home games in this homestand here against Cincinnati?
Yeah, I continue to be very curious about their ability to score runs. And that is something that's been the variable, I think, more than anything else. The pitching has actually held up to a certain extent, and that's been good to see for me. Now I'm very interested in watching Kyle Leahy today, because there has been some up and down to him, and the Cardinals have actually got it set up today with Hunter Dobbins available to pitch in bulk either today or tomorrow. You know, Leahy's one of those guys who tends to struggle third time through the order. If that happens today, the leash is going to be very short for him, and I think they're going to go to Dobbins pretty quickly. But I've got a certain level of confidence in what the Cardinals are doing from a pitching standpoint. They have to score runs. They just have to. And whether it's finding a way to hit more home runs, or whether it's finding a way to maybe develop a run somehow, some way, that's the thing that I feel like has really been missing as they went through that mini slump there, really going back to the early part of May. When they're losing, they're just not scoring enough runs.
Got a comment on YouTube from Zachary Kelly, who says he has over 16,200 unread emails. So he does have you there. In fact, he's got you like quintupled up there. So that's concerning, Zachary. But we'll deal with you. To be fair to him, no calls or texts that are unread or unacknowledged. So, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag there. So he's ahead in some areas, but, you know, you still got your crown where it counts.
But let's get to the next one. Matt, he who doesn't smile or acknowledge fans' email. I smile. Don't I smile, Nate?
I don't know. I didn't know that you had this reputation for being so cold in the market.
And I don't know what fan emails I'm not responding to.
Well, the fan emails that don't hook you in the first line that you can see in the preview, you know. I want to get to what you said about the Cardinals offense, though, because the good news is tonight they're facing Brady Singer, who has had a tough season so far and earned run average over 6 on the year. And he's coming off a very, very poor month of May. He started 5 games. He was 0-4 with a 7.77 ERA, and the league hit .323 against him in the month of May. So if the Cardinals offense is looking to get right, tonight could be a good opportunity for that.
Yeah, you would think so, and it's a really good point by you, Nate, because, the numbers are just terrible in the month for Singer. Now, guys like that do scare me sometimes with the Cardinals because it just seems like a guy will come in on that sort of run, and all of a sudden they'll go 7 innings and give up 2 or 3 runs. It's just like, you know, the Cardinals too often are a player's get-back-right game, but Shota Imanaga came in, and he had been struggling recently, and the Cardinals had success against him. I think the last time they faced Chris Paddock, he had been struggling, and they did an okay job against him. So the thing I just said, I think that's more historical. That's actually not what's happened as much this year. The Cardinals have had success against some of the guys that they should have success against, and if they can do that tonight, that sets things up to start the series on a really good note.
In fact, theoretically, at least going based off of ERA and record of those kind of the overarching statistics, the Cardinals have an advantage, if not a significant advantage, in every pitching matchup this weekend, because Nick Lodolo, who's scheduled tomorrow for Cincinnati, and Rhett Lauder, who's scheduled on Saturday, also have ERAs north of 5, each of them, though in smaller sample sizes than Brady Singer's. In particular, Lodolo has only started 5 games so far this year. And the other thing to keep in mind with Reds pitchers is that they have to endure one of the more difficult home environments for pitchers on the year, though Lodolo's the only one who has significantly worse numbers at home. Singer actually has been significantly better in Cincinnati than he has been on the road this year, and the same story for Lauder. So, I look at this as a huge opportunity. If we're talking on Monday and the Cardinals go 3 days against the Reds and, you know, don't put up a significant number of runs, let's say the Cardinals score only 7, 8, 9 runs across the 3 games, that's going to really get the alarm bells going, right? This should be a 15-run-plus kind of weekend series for the Cards, I think.
I don't know if the number's 15, but yes, I mean, they should be able to go and score some runs. And for me, I keep going back to this period of time, and have they fixed some of the issues that have been in existence? And if they don't go score a good number of runs this weekend, I think to your point, Nate, yeah, then you're sitting here saying, well, this is still kind of the same of what you saw against San Diego and what you saw a little bit against the A's and what you saw when you lost 2 of 3 against Pittsburgh and only scored a couple runs in there. It is definitely a worrisome thing. Now, I think the lineup looks a little bit different now. Obviously, they brought up a Nelson Velasquez. They brought up a Jimmy Crooks. Lars Nootbaar is going to be activated before the game tonight. So the lineup looks different. There's a little bit more depth to it. You hope that that results in them being able to score more runs. And I just hope they hit a few more home runs as well. When this team was one of the better run-scoring teams in baseball, they were hitting home runs. I keep going back to the stat that when they played Milwaukee at home right at the beginning of May, they were 4th in Major League Baseball in home runs, and they'd been a very good run-scoring team. That number has completely fallen off, and it's not a coincidence that at the same time they haven't hit as many, they haven't scored as many runs, and they haven't won as many games. So start hitting home runs, start getting extra base hits. Hopefully Nootbaar is a guy who can provide an extra base hit or two for you here and there, and that's when I start to feel better about what's going on with the club.
Yeah, it's something Kevin Wheeler and I talked about a little bit during rush hour yesterday, and I think would be good for you and I to talk about just in a couple of minutes after this break, is the fact that this has been a clear top half, bottom half kind of offense, right? The top half is in a good place, bottom half has been in a terrible place, and that lineup is theoretically going to be lengthened by not only some of the call-ups they've already made,
but also by the return of Lars Nootbaar, by hopefully not too long thereafter, the return of Nathan Church, and you know, on down, you just stretch out that lineup a little bit. Something for us to talk about, kind of where the solutions are going to come from here for the Cardinals, because obviously all of those solutions, at least for the short term and maybe for the entire year, are going to have to come from within the organization for the foreseeable future. We'll take a break. Don't forget as well, Brad Thompson will be with us at 12:30 talking Redbirds. Gashouse Gang continues after this on KMOX.
Now back to the Gashouse Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Gashouse Gang continues. Nate Gatter, Matt Pauly back with you. Brad Thompson will join us at the bottom of the hour talking Redbirds. And Matt, obviously the offensive conversation is dominating the landscape at the moment. We were having the first part of it during the initial segment. Lars Nootbaar will be activated today. Not sure yet if he will be in the lineup tonight or how that's going to look as they kind of ease him back in, though he's had 3 weeks. He had the maximum 20 days on his rehab assignment, and that is going to serve to lengthen the lineup. So too will Nathan Church if and when he returns. And so that's really what it seems like it's about for the Cardinals right now. There are no issues with how the top four guys are hitting in this lineup. It's about how can they get 5 through 9 hitting at a higher level, and it seems like Lars Nootbaar could at least theoretically be part of that puzzle.
Absolutely could. I would be pretty surprised if he's not in the lineup today. He did not play a game yesterday. You would just think that this is going to be somebody who is going to be in the lineup, and they'll ease him into to what you said, Nate, but I think I would expect him to be back in the lineup today. You get Nathan Church back. All of a sudden, at that point, you look at the empty spots in this order. Victor Scott II has not given you much offensively. They've had a hard time getting much production out of left field, and if you're able to put two guys in there who can do a little bit more, that starts to do something for where all of a sudden there's not as much pressure on a Mason Wynn, who has struggled offensively. He's looked a little bit better recently, which is really good to see, but if you put Nootbaar in there, if Church can be the guy that he's been at times this year, and it's a lot to ask that of him because he's not somebody who has a track record, but if you're able to do that, then there's a little bit less pressure on, you know, even on days where Pedro Pais catches, because offensively he just hasn't given you much. It's just, you know, how do you get a lineup to go 6 deep? How do you get a lineup to go 7 deep? It doesn't have to go 9 deep, but you need a little bit more from 5 on, which they just have not gotten this year.
I don't want to stir the pot. This is not intended to stir the pot, because I think we're a ways away from that. The Cardinals would want to see Church come back and would want to see how things go for him if they are going to use him in center field some to try to put Lars Nootbaar in left and bolster, as you said, the offensive production from both of those spots. But the other piece of this is that Joshua Baez just keeps raking in Memphis. What do you think is the point at which, forget about, you know, maybe we want your opinion too, but beyond that, what do you think the Cardinals would have to see, or at what is the point, the thresholds we would have to cross over before they're really seriously thinking about pulling the trigger on Baez to play some center field?
Yeah, I think that, well, that's the tough part, because I don't know how good of a center fielder he is defensively. And I'm the first guy who's like, hey, if a guy can hit, let's stop worrying so much about what they are defensively. Sometimes I feel like the team leans into defense a little bit too much. So that's been one of my stances I've been on for a while. That being said, him in center field, and he's continuing to play it at Memphis, and that's good, and he's getting more and more experience. And if he can come up and have a really impactful bat, then you can't just ignore it. I think he's going to be up in the big leagues at some point this year, but I think there's dominoes that just have to be pushed over. You know, people were really clamoring for him to get called up recently, and I felt like you had to figure out this Nootbaar thing first. So you get Nootbaar back. What's it going to look like? Where is he at from an offensive standpoint? Is he going to be a guy that he had been really prior to last year, or was it still going to continue to look like who he was last year? And you figure out what's going to happen with Nootbaar. You're not that far off from the trade deadline. Is Nootbaar going to be involved in those type of conversations? And once that role and that future is kind of solidified, that's the point that I start more looking at Baez. And there's a lot of fans that really push back on that. They think Baez should be here right now based off what he's doing. And I understand why fans feel that way. The numbers that he's putting up at AAA are absolutely 100%, without a doubt, compelling. I think if the Cardinals had their way, Baez would come up as a corner outfielder, not a center fielder. So it's a puzzle that's kind of hard to put together right now.
Yeah, it's a good point because it's also about how does that all fit together, right? And you know, Lars Nootbaar is not going to be in a place, especially coming off of his injuries, where they're going to want him in center field on a regular basis. So if the answer is that they're trying to shuffle other options, then obviously you can understand why Baez would be an option they proceed with caution on, especially because here's the other thing. I think it's easy to forget about the players as being human beings, right? You don't just plug their numbers in to a computer system and you get those numbers, or 10% drop off or 20% drop off in those numbers, right? It's not that easy. They are human beings who are subject to being affected by their circumstances. And I think if you bring up a guy like Baez, who's going to have expectations attached to him because he's the relatively rare prospect whose name is reasonably well known already in the major league market before he gets there, there's already pressure baked into that pie every time he comes to the plate from his debut on. If you're giving that guy also the task of having to play a position, especially a premium position, every day where he is not 100% comfortable or confident, the last thing you want is that Joshua Baez on his debut misplays a ball in center field, and now he's got that in his head. Like, you want him to be in set up to succeed, and unless they're 100% confident in him in center field, I don't think it makes sense to call a guy up like that and put him in a position where you can't maximize his chance of success.
No, I think you're right. You're right on. And the strikeout numbers too are a little bit noticeable. I think it's been a bit better for him. And you don't want to be too worried about strikeouts when the guys hit 17 home runs in the first 53 games of the year at AAA. But I would also remind folks, you know, a lot of people who are calling for Baez to be up right now are the exact same people who are just clamoring for Nolan Gorman to get brought up in 2021 when he had almost 800 OPS at Memphis. And he had a nice start to his big league career, but that's not who he has been. So just this assumption that a guy is doing something in the minor leagues automatically means that he's going to do some version of that at the major league level, I think that's a little bit more of a flawed concept. Now, again, I can talk out of both sides of my mouth because I do think Baez is going to be a really, really good big leaguer at some point in time. I want the developmental boxes to be checked off for just about every player. And that seems to be something that Heim Bloom really cares about. I think he may care about it more than a lot of president baseball operations / general managers across baseball. AAA has kind of become a place in baseball where you're trying to send guys there for as little time as possible, that it's just a check a couple things off and then get them there. I get the sense with Heim, he really views the AAA process as an important part of the development process for players. So I'm going to defer back. I'm going to step back, and I'm going to allow them to really, when they think that a guy is ready to be in the big leagues, when they have indeed checked off all those proverbial boxes, those guys will get called up. And if they don't feel that way yet about Baez, I'm not going to be upset about that.
We got a comment over on YouTube I couldn't help but chuckle at, because it was when you were talking about how you hope the offense gets some more home runs.
Yeah.
And the real third man said, why don't we send someone down to the home run supermarket and pick up some home runs, which he's saying tongue in cheek. But to the extent that there is a home run supermarket where you can go and pick up some home runs, a guy who has 17 of them in 50-odd AAA games is as close as you're going to get to a grab-and-go aisle for home runs at the supermarket.
Yeah, no, there's been some other guys who have had power, not Baez power. That's a good point by you, Nate, on that. And by the way, just since we brought his comments up, he did say Milwaukee 30th in home runs, 7th in run score, another narrative bites the dust. No, another narrative does not bite the dust. Milwaukee is a unicorn. They do things differently than everybody else. You can't recreate it. You can't try to copy it. Show me a bunch of teams that don't hit home runs and score a bunch of runs, and then we can start talking about a narrative bite the dust. If your only example of something that I say not being true is Milwaukee, then you're actually proving my point, because Milwaukee is the biggest unicorn in all of Major League Baseball.
Brad Thompson is going to be with us next, continuing the Cardinals conversation before the Redbirds open a 3-game series at Busch Stadium tonight against Cincinnati. Gas House Gang after
KMOX. Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Nate Gatter, Matt Pauly back with you as the Gas House Gang continues on KMOX, joined now by Brad Thompson, our Cardinals analyst on Cardinals TV. Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing well. What do you have your eye on in this series against the Reds as the Cardinals come off sort of the rare home off day? We're in the middle of a homestand and now get to finish out a 9-gamer at Busch with 3 against Cincinnati.
Yeah, like I think right now the big thing is, like, there's not one individual I'm looking at. Like, what I'm looking forward to is kind of what Ollie talked about the other day. I'm just looking forward to execution. That's the biggest key with this ball club. And look, this isn't reinventing the wheel by any means, but this is a group that plays very narrow margins. Okay, they don't win by a ton, they don't end up losing by a ton, so they play these tight affairs where the little details have to be right. And against this Reds team, we know that they've got some talent. I think they've underperformed on some levels, but this is a group that can bite you quickly if you don't do the little things. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Brad, you talk about the little things. That second game against Texas, the Cardinals did not do the little things in the 7-4 loss, came back with a really clean game on Wednesday. When a team goes through that, where all of a sudden just a lot of things don't look right fundamentally, it's not a good game, is that just the case of, hey, it's a 162-game season and every once in a while things are going to be off, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, yes and no, right? Because you are definitely going to have times like that. You're definitely going to have games where you're just a little bit off, and you don't need to mention it, and you know that your guys will end up figuring it out. But there are also times where you want to make sure you addressed it. And I think that Ollie did that. He did it publicly after the game, just talking about the details. I think you really, especially with a young team, really want to reinforce how important those things are, of getting those details right day in and day out. So, yes, they will happen, but the goal is, as a coach or as a manager and a coaching staff, is to make sure they don't happen very often, right? And make sure that all of the details are talked about, that they are covered, and you're setting your team up for the best possible success that they can have and putting them in a good position. So, Matt, you're around this ball club a lot. You guys know that they're very well coached. They're very, very well prepared before games. But you still have to reiterate with a young team because especially you think about how much you're in your own head as a player, and you're a young player and you're like, man, I got to get a hit, or I'm struggling at the plate. And then all of a sudden you're focused on that, and then the small details of the game, of whether it's hitting a cutoff man or it's getting a ground ball to the right side or it's getting down a bunt, like whatever those are, sometimes get lost in the mix. And reiterating, focusing on the task at hand oftentimes is very important.
Cardinals TV color analyst Brad Thompson is with us on the Gas House Gang. Brad, when we're using terms like execution and little things that are sometimes maybe opaque to fans on the outside, I'm curious, in the middle of a season like this, obviously the Cardinals or any major league team, they're not getting together and practicing in the way that a high school baseball team does, right? They're not, coaches aren't drilling in, here's what we're going to do when we're going through our infield and outfield, in the same way that people are used to watching their 15-year-old practice baseball. So how does that actually get installed during the course of a season when a manager says, a coaching staff says, we want to emphasize a little more of this thing, we want to emphasize a little more of that thing? How does execution actually improve in the middle of a season?
No, it's a really good question, and I do think that there are a lot of things that happen at the major league level, even through 162 games, that people would be surprised by. You talk about your kid's 15U team. Yeah, you're not taking your traditional infield every day. There's a lot more work, though, that detailed individual work that happens that people don't see than you might imagine. I mean, guys are out there, they're taking their ground balls every day, their fly balls, their routes, they're covering bases, they're doing all of the little things that they need to be prepared for a given day. And then something that they do on a daily basis is video stuff. And they'll do, they'll talk about, obviously you're going to talk about every game, a brief overview, what went well, you know, how do we repeat that? But they'll also talk about like little things that maybe did not go well. And how do we, you know, show a little video of it? How do we fix this? How do we make sure this doesn't happen again? Those are really important things to be able to see. And they focus on that, because if you let those little things go, they end up just being things that happen over and over again, right? So they make sure that they don't do that. They make sure that they kind of call these things out and show these things, and do so not in a manner where it's like you feel like that you're getting a slap on the wrist. It's a, hey, we are all learning through this experience. And when you have a young ball club doing that, that's a good way to do it. So, yeah, you'll hit on your stuff. You'll take your ground balls. If there's some things they see in a game, whether it's a movement thing or it's a reaction thing, they'll work on those on an individual basis. But there is a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes to make sure those details, when the lights turn on and the game actually matters tonight at 7:15, that guys are ready.
Brad, the biggest headline going in this weekend is the return of Lars Nootbaar. We would assume that he's likely to be in the starting lineup today. We'll see how much they use him. But what should fans be expecting from Nootbaar, a guy who's coming off double heel surgery, something that's very odd for athletes and baseball players, had the 20 days on the minor league rehab. But this is a very unique thing for a guy to be coming back from.
Yeah, no, it's a very hard one to figure out exactly what to expect, because look, we know when Newt is a guy that gets on base a ton. He's got pop. You can plug him in a corner outfield, assuming he'll be in left field, and you end up being good to go. But you do only have a certain amount of reps. He's getting some reps on the rehab, getting reps throughout all of his training. But it's different, as we know, at the big league level. But there's a real excitement to starting to get your ball club back and getting the group back that you expected to go into the season with. So for Lars, again, I'm not the guy with the big office making any of these lineups, but you could easily see him in the lineup tonight in left field, batting fifth, adding a little bit of a layer of potential protection maybe behind Jordan Walker, and go from there. I mean, it's exciting. Got a chance to talk to Lars last night. He's pumped up. He feels like it's been an eternity since he has been with the club and just been playing and been able to help. It's a different beast when you're technically on the team, but you're rehabbing, you're around, you're in and out. You don't feel like you're a part of it. We know how big of a nucleus he is, like in terms of just the team's overall personality. He's just got a great vibe to him. I think that part of it's going to be great to get back, but he's definitely going to help you offensively.
That's what it's really about, right? Matt and I have been talking about this already today, that it's about lengthening the lineup and finding ways to bolster the bottom half of this lineup. Because the other piece of it, right, I mean, it has to be that as they start to do that, it takes some pressure off of these guys. Matt talked about it. Mason Wynn in particular, maybe Nolan Gorman as well, that the pressure is just not on them so much, and we can see those guys hopefully get back to themselves.
You definitely need more length. I mean, look, I'm sure that you guys have gone over the numbers a ton. 1 through 4 essentially has gotten the job done, and 5 through 9 hasn't. And obviously there are outliers in that situation where people are, but that's kind of been the story of the season. It's been a very top-heavy lineup, or at least the story of the last 5 weeks or so, because one of the bigger differences early in the season when the Cardinals were scoring over 5 runs a game, Vic was getting on base a ton, figuring out ways, whether it was walks or hitting the ball well, or, you know, dropping down bunts for hits, whatever it was, he was really spurring the offense from the bottom, had some other guys that were contributing. Pajes was hitting a little bit more at the bottom of the order, and then you saw the results. Right now, that is quiet. So you're absolutely right. Lengthening this lineup is going to be an enormous key down the stretch for the Cardinals. I think their pitching staff has done a fantastic job, especially in the last 5 weeks where the offense has had a bit of a downturn, of giving them a chance to win every day. So if you end up starting to get some of those aspects and start churning, and just start getting a little bit more offense out of the bottom, you are going to be in really good shape.
We can't assume any of the things that I'm about to say, but you don't have to squint that hard to see where the lineup can be much deeper, even beyond Nootbaar, because if a Nathan Church comes back and if he plays well, and that's not a guarantee, that helps you out. Jimmy Crooks offensively, I think a lot of people really believe in who he is going to be, especially offensively at the major league level. And even once Ramon Urias gets back, if because of Gorman's struggles, if you start platooning him at third base a little bit, that's going to make that lineup look better, specifically against left-handers. I mean, there seems to be things happening here, Brad, that could indeed lengthen that lineup.
No, you're right. And those things are exciting, but we all know this, right? Everything can look good on paper, but it's got to look good in practice. And that's going to be the key. So a lot of guys have been given opportunities to grow into roles. Many have taken advantage of them. Some maybe not as much. But that's what you're going to want to see down the stretch, is how do you, now that you get healthy, you know, and there's always going to be some bumps and bruises along the way and other guys will have to fill in, but who takes advantage of the opportunity? Who ends up running with it? And what does this lineup ultimately look like? You know, where does Newt end up? What does it look like for Mason Wynn? What is he offensively as a player? We saw glimpses of it last year. I know he's been frustrated with the way that the year has gone. The idea of taking some pressure off. I think it's easy to say you take pressure off an individual, but regardless, if you're struggling as a guy, you're always going to put that internal pressure on you until you start getting it done. But the pieces are falling into place. This team, more often than not, is figuring out different ways to win ball games. So as soon as you start getting healthier and healthier, and you mentioned Church, I think that offensively, I know there's more there than he's shown at this level, and I know that defensively he helps your club out a ton. There's a lot of good things on the horizon for this ball club.
Brad, we appreciate your time. Thanks a lot. Call us a winner tonight, huh?
Let's do it. I'm looking forward to it. Reds are going to be in town. Going to be a fun weekend at Busch. I expect you to see you guys out there, tarps off.
Yeah, Matt's going to be over in the radio booth. Just look through the window. He's going to be tarps off the whole game.
Yes, Matt. I'm ready.
Brad Thompson joining us
see that.
On the Gas House Gang here on KMOX.
Well, FM KMOX. Now back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Chesterfield Fence and Deck. And Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Nate Gatter, Matt Pauly back with you as we wrap up the Gas House Gang on this Friday afternoon before the Cardinals open up a three-game series tonight, 7:15 at Busch Stadium against the Cincinnati Reds. Matt will have the pregame for you here on KMOX and across the Cardinals radio network starting at 6:20. Glad you've been with us however and wherever you might be following. If you missed any of the show, including our interview with Cardinals TV analyst Brad Thompson, you can go back and hear that on the free Odyssey app, AUDACY, in podcast form. Or if you're going to be out and about and need the Cardinals in your earbuds tonight so you can hear Matt Pauly and Ricky Horton on the call, you can also get that free live Cardinals baseball on the free Odyssey app. I want to go through a couple of comments that we got on our streams. You can follow the show on YouTube, Facebook, X, anywhere else that we are streaming across your social platforms. And I want to go back to one in particular because, you know, this is the ongoing Matt Pauly and real third man dispute here on the home run situation. And I got to stick up quickly because Matt was talking about how Milwaukee is an outlier and the fact that the Brewers hit very few home runs and are still number six now in MLB in runs scored with 301 this year is not proof of anything as far as home runs not being important to run producing. And our friend Real Third Man said exceptions don't prove the rule. And technically that's true. It's kind of a silly phrase when people say that, right? Because no exception proves the rule. What proves the rule is the fact that there is an exception. And that's what the point with Milwaukee. So of the teams that are in the top 10 right now in runs scored in Major League Baseball, Nationals, Dodgers, Braves, Pirates, Yankees, Brewers, Twins, Cubs, White Sox, Astros. That's the top 10. Seven of those 10 teams are also in the top 10 in home runs. Two of the others, the Cubs and the Twins, are 12 and 14 in home runs. And so nine out of the top 10 highest scoring teams in Major League Baseball this year are in the top 14 in home runs, and seven of the top 10 run scoring teams are in the top 10 in homers. The only one that's not in the top half of baseball in homers and is in the top 10 in runs scored is the Milwaukee Brewers, and they're one of only three that aren't top 10 in homers and are top 10 in runs. So what that means is they are a glaring exception. No one else is like them among the 10 highest scoring teams in baseball. No one else is even remotely like them among the 10 highest scoring teams in baseball. The Brewers have hit only 44 home runs this year. The next lowest total among a team top 10 in runs scored in MLB belongs to the Minnesota Twins. They've hit 69, 25 more homers than the Brewers have. So the Brewers are the definition of an extreme statistical outlier, and that's exactly why the phrase exceptions prove the rule exists, not because the Brewers literally prove the rule. Obviously, if you tried to use the Brewers as proof that you need to hit home runs to score runs, you'd be a raving lunatic. The point is that they are such an extreme outlier that they show the rule is strong because all the other teams follow the rule. That's the point. So I just think anybody who doesn't grasp that has an agenda on run scoring. And trust me, I love small ball as much as anybody, but there is no doubt that hitting home runs and scoring runs correlate at a high level.
No, it look, I spent a lot of time in Milwaukee covering the Brewers. I had a front row seat to what they do. You're not going to find somebody who appreciates what Milwaukee does more than I do. And I do actually think that there are a lot of things that Milwaukee does that the Cardinals can learn from. The fact that Matt Arnold, their president of baseball operations, and Heim Bloom, the Cardinals president of baseball operations, both have history with the Tampa Bay Rays and just what that organization has been able to do. Like, there are some things you can emulate. And are there ways that you can try to score a few more runs without hitting as many home runs? Yeah, absolutely. And we saw the Cardinals steal a bunch of bases in that final game against the Rangers. That was good to see, because you get a runner on at first. Well, if you happen to get another hit in the inning and you got a guy on at second instead of first, well, then you're going to run, and all likelihood you're going to score a run. So I'm not saying you completely ignore trying to be aggressive and trying to do some things to push across a run here, push across a run there. But just to say, well, you just try to do what Milwaukee does and not hit many home runs, but you're going to still score a ton of runs, that's not the thing. Can you look at what Milwaukee does and say, what are some of the things that they do that maybe can help you produce an extra run here, an extra run there? You win games by scoring multiple runs in innings more often than not. When you start playing for a single run, a lot of times you're playing for a loss. So I'm not trying to just completely be dismissive of what Milwaukee does and not say that there aren't some things you can learn from it, but to just have this overwhelming belief that home runs are not a necessary component of scoring a lot of runs in today's Major League Baseball because one single team does it, I think that's a flawed argument.
To be fair, and maybe this is me talking out of both sides of my mouth, there are also the Tampa Bay Rays, who are third lowest in MLB in home runs and 14th in runs scored. So they're not dramatically above average in scoring runs, but they're kind of a fun team, doing it differently than Milwaukee, but a team that, again, historically, when you talk about Heim Bloom and some of those guys, there's kind of zigging when everybody else is zagging or vice versa, and now trying to become a very contact-oriented team, which is just kind of fun. So if you're somebody who's, if you have MLB TV and you're thinking about, how can I see a little bit of kind of old-school baseball or even just see a team trying to do something different than the rest of the league, maybe that's a fun place to go. One other comment that I wanted to get to, I felt bad that we didn't have time when it came in, and then we're talking to Brad. But John commented on YouTube. He asked a question, guys, why do our catchers do the Tony Pena leg thing, meaning putting one leg down and rather than a traditional squat? It seems that we're missing a lot of pass balls. Seems like they can't shift and smother. So the first thing, and I'm going to let Matt mostly take this because he's going to be able to give you a bit more of the inside baseball perspective. The first and most important thing to know is, it's not just Cardinals catchers. I mean, this is catchers across Major League Baseball, across minor league baseball, across college baseball. I haven't watched high school baseball recently, but I assume they're starting to do it a bunch. And it's all about the value of stealing those low strikes. Now, maybe that value will diminish as we move closer and closer to some kind of ABS system. But for the moment, the value of framing, although slightly reduced from last year, is still not insignificant. And the idea is that, broadly, you're getting enough value out of getting those strikes at the bottom of the zone that even if it makes you marginally less athletic, you're giving up less than you're getting back.
Yeah, it's a real – I wish we had more time. And I'm lucky enough that two people I have all the respect in the world for, Kevin Wheeler, our own here at KMOX, who is a former Division I catcher and works with catchers and is an instructor, and then Benji Molina, somebody who's a former Major League catcher and has done it at the highest level. I love both those guys a lot. I've talked to them about this, and they are diametrically opposed on this, because Kevin will tell you exactly what you just said, Nate, about the ability to frame pitches and where you're at and all of that, where Benji, he doesn't like that at all, and he thinks it's something that can hurt. And you do see, I think the John says just the idea about being able to receive pitches well that is impacted negatively by that. So you are, as the ABS system does continue to have more of an impact, maybe you see guys go away from that a little bit. But at the same time, not every pitch is being challenged. And we saw the other day a team had lost both their challenges before the second inning even started. So there's always going to be value in being able to frame pitches. I think right now in baseball, that is being valued more than some of the deficiencies that go along with receiving. And if you ask Kevin, he'll tell you that you don't have to have deficiencies in receiving just because you have that leg out.
Well, I think this has been a very pleasant hour. Matt, thank you so much for spending it with me. And we are super excited to hear you, not only at our pregame starting at 6:20, but on the call with Ricky Horton tonight, first pitch at 7:15, the Cardinals and the Reds. Good luck, my friend. Have fun.
Thanks for having me. This was fun today.
Matt Pauly, Nate Gatter with you here for the Gas House Gang. Thanks to Brad Thompson as well for joining us. If you missed anything, you can go back and hear it on the free Odyssey app. We appreciate all the engagement as well from you commenters. Hope that you will be with us for Cardinals pregame and the Redbirds and the Reds tonight from Busch Stadium. Gas House Gang on KMOX.